Chapter 50. Paula's show of petulance was perhaps not wholly because she had appeared to seek him, but also from being reminded by his criticism that Mr. Woodwell's prophecy on her weakly succumbing to surroundings was slowly working out its fulfillment. She moved forward towards the gate at the further end of the square, beyond which the cathedral lay at a very short distance. Paula did not turn her head, and Destancy strolled slowly after her down the Rue du College. The day happened to be one of the church festivals, and people were a second time flocking into the lofty monument of Catholicism at its meridian. Paula vanished into the porch with the rest, and, almost catching the wicket as it flew back from her hand, he too entered the high-shouldered edifice, an edifice doomed to labor under the melancholy misfortune of seeming only half as vast as it really is, and as truly as whimsically described by Heine as a monument built with the strength of titans, and decorated with the patience of dwarfs. Destancy walked up the nave, so close beside her, as to touch her dress, but she would not recognize his presence. The darkness that evening had thrown over the interior, which was scarcely broken by the few candles dotted about, being a sufficient excuse, if she required one. "Miss Power," apostrophe Destancy said at last, "I am coming to the service with you." Apostrophe apostrophe, she received the intelligence without surprise, and he knew as he had been conscious of him all the way. Paula went no further than the middle of the nave, where there was hardly a soul, and took a chair beside a solitary rushlight which looked amid the vague gloom of the inaccessible architecture like a lighthouse at the foot of tall cliffs. He put his hand on the next chair, saying, "Do you object?" Apostrophe apostrophe, "Not at all, apostrophe," she replied, and he sat down. "Suppose we go into the choir," apostrophe said Destancy presently. "Nobody sits out here in the shadows." Apostrophe apostrophe, "This is sufficiently near, and we have a candle," apostrophe Paula murmured. Before another minute had passed, the candle flame began to drown in its own grease, slowly dwindled, and went out. "I suppose that means I am to go into the choir in spite of myself." "Heaven is on your side," apostrophe said Paula. And rising, they left their now totally dark corner, and joined the noiseless shadowy figures who in twos and threes kept passing up the nave. Within the choir there was a blaze of light, partly from the altar, and more particularly from the image of the saint whom they had assembled to honor, which stood, surrounded by candles and a thicket of flowering plants, some way in advance of the footpace. A secondary radiance from the same source was reflected upward into their faces by the polished marble pavement, except when interrupted by the shady forms of the officiating priests. When it was over and the people were moving off, Destancy and his companion went towards the saint, now besieged by numbers of women anxious to claim the respective flower pots they had lent for the decoration. As each struggled for her own, seized and marched off with it, Paula remarked, "This rather spoils the solemn effect of what has gone before." Apostrophe apostrophe, "I perceive you are a harsh Puritan." Apostrophe apostrophe, "No, Captain Destancy. Why will you speak so? I am far too much otherwise. I have grown to be so much of your way of thinking, that I accuse myself, and am accused by others, of being worldly, and half, and other dreadful things, though it isn't that at all." Apostrophe apostrophe, they were now walking down the nave, preceded by the somber figures with the pot flowers, who were just visible in the rays that reached them through the distant choir screen at their back, while above the gray night sky and stars looked in upon them through the high clerestory windows. "Do be a little more of my way of thinking." Apostrophe apostrophe, rejoined Destancy passionately.
Don't
speak, apostrophe she said rapidly. "There are Millie and Champro." Apostrophe apostrophe, Millie was one of the maids, and Champro the courier and valet who had been engaged by Abner Power. They had been sitting behind the other pair throughout the service, and indeed knew rather more of the relations between Paula and Destancy than Paula knew herself. hastening on the two latter went out, and walked together silently up the short street. The Place Saint-Denis was now lit up, lights shone from the hotel windows, and the world without the cathedral had so far advanced in nocturnal change that it seemed as if they had been gone from it for hours. Within the hotel they found the change even greater than without. Mrs. Goodman met them halfway on the stairs. "Poor Charlotte is worse," she said. "Quite feverish, and almost delirious." Paula reproached herself with "Why did I go away?" The common interest of Distancy and Paula in the sufferer at once reproduced an ease between them as nothing else could have done. The physician was again called in, who prescribed certain draughts, and recommended that someone should sit up with her that night. If Paula allowed demonstrations of love to escape her towards anybody, it was towards Charlotte, and her instinct was at once to watch by the invalid's couch herself, at least for some hours, it being deemed unnecessary to call in a regular nurse, unless she should sicken further. "But I will sit with her," said Distancy. "Surely you had better go to bed?" Paula would not be persuaded. And thereupon Distancy, saying he was going into the town for a short time before retiring, left the room. The last omnibus returned from the last train, and the inmates of the hotel retired to rest. Meanwhile a telegram had arrived for Captain Distancy, but as he had not yet returned it was put in his bedroom, with directions to the night porter, to remind him of its arrival. Paula sat on with the sleeping Charlotte. Presently she retired into the adjacent sitting room with a book, and flung herself on a couch, leaving the door open between her and her charge, in case the latter should awake. While she sat a new breathing seemed to mingle with the regular sound of Charlotte's, that reached her through the doorway. She turned quickly, and saw her uncle standing behind her. "Oh, I thought you were in Paris," said Paula. "I have just come from there. I could not stay. Something has occurred to my mind about this affair." His strangely marked visage, now more noticeable from being worn with fatigue, had a spectral effect by the nightlight. "What affair?" "This marriage." "Paula, Distancy is a good fellow enough, but you must not accept him just yet." Paula did not answer. "Do you hear? You must not accept him," repeated her uncle, "till I have been to England and examined into matters. I start in an hour's time by the 2:10 train." "This is something very new." "Yes, 'tis new," he murmured, relapsing into his Dutch manner. "You must not accept him till something is made clear to me, something about a queer relationship. I have come from Paris to say so." "Uncle, I don't understand this. I am my own mistress in all matters, and though I don't mind telling you, I have by no means resolved to accept him. The question of her marriage is especially a woman's own affair." Her uncle stood irresolute for a moment, as if his convictions were more than his proofs. "I say no more at present," he murmured. "Can I do anything for you about a new architect?" "Appoint Havil." "Very well. Good night." And then he left her. In a short time she heard him go down and out of the house, to cross to England by the morning steamboat. With a little shrug, as if she resented his interference in so delicate a point, she settled herself down anew to her book. 1, 2, 3 hours passed, when Charlotte awoke, but soon slumbered sweetly again. Millie had stayed up for some time lest her mistress should require anything, but the girl being sleepy, Paula sent her to bed. It was a lovely night of early summer, and drawing aside the window curtains she looked out upon the flowers and trees of the Place, now quite visible, for it was nearly 3 o'clock, and the morning light was growing strong. She turned her face upwards. Except in the case of one bedroom, all the windows on that side of the hotel were in darkness. The room being rather close, she left the casement ajar, and opening the door walked out upon the staircase landing. A number of caged canaries were kept here, and she observed in the dim light of the landing lamp how snugly their heads were all tucked in. On returning to the sitting room again, she could hear that Charlotte was still slumbering, and this encouraging circumstance disposed her to go to bed herself. Before, however, as he had made a move, a gentle tap came to the door. Paula opened it. There, in the faint light by the sleeping canaries, stood Charlotte's brother. How is she now? ? He whispered. Sleeping soundly, ? Said Paula. That's a blessing. I have not been to bed. I came in late, and have now come down to know if I had not better take your place. ? Nobody is required, I think. But you can judge for yourself. ? Up to this point they had conversed in the doorway of the sitting room, which Destancy now entered, crossing it to Charlotte's apartment. He came out from the latter at a pensive pace. She is doing well, ? He said gently. You have been very good to her. Was the chair I saw by her bed the one you have been sitting in all night? ? I sometimes sat there, sometimes here. ? I wish I could have sat beside you, and held your hand, I speak frankly. ? To excess. ? And why not? I do not wish to hide from you any corner of my breast, futile as candor may be. Just heaven. For what reason is it ordered that courtship, in which soldiers are usually so successful, should be a failure with me? ? Your lack of foresight chiefly in indulging feelings that were not encouraged. That, and my uncle's indiscreet permission to you to travel with us, have precipitated our relations in a way that I could neither foresee nor avoid, though of late I have had apprehensions that it might come to this. You vex and disturb me by such words of regret. ? Not more than you vex and disturb me. But you cannot hate the man who loves you so devotedly? ? I have said, before, I don't hate you. I repeat that I am interested in your family and its associations, because of its complete contrast with my own. ? She might have added, and I am additionally interested just now, because my uncle has forbidden me to be. ? But you don't care enough for me personally to save my happiness. ? Paula hesitated. From the moment Destancy confronted her, she had felt that this nocturnal conversation was to be a grave business. The cathedral clock struck 3. I have thought once or twice, ? She said with a naivety unusual in her, that if I could be sure of giving peace and joy to your mind by becoming your wife, I ought to endeavor to do so, and make the best of it merely as a charity. But I believe that feeling is a mistake. Your discontent is constitutional, and would go on just the same, whether I accepted you or no. My refusal of you is purely an imaginary grievance. ? Not if I think otherwise. ? Oh no, ? She murmured, with a sense that the place was very lonely and silent. If you think it otherwise, I suppose it is otherwise. ? My darling, my Paula. ? He said, seizing her hand. Do promise me something. You must indeed. Captain Destancy. ? She said, trembling and turning away. Captain Destancy. ? She tried to withdraw her fingers, then faced him, exclaiming in a firm voice a third time, Captain Destancy, let go my hand, for I tell you I will not marry you. ? Good God. ? He cried, dropping her hand. What have I driven you to say in your anger? Retract it, oh, retract it. ? Don't urge me further, as you value my good opinion. ? To lose you now is to lose you forever. Come, please answer. " "I won't be compelled." " "She interrupted with vehemence. I am resolved not to be yours, not to give you an answer tonight. Never, never will I be reasoned out of my intention. And I say I won't answer you tonight. I should never have let you be so much with me, but for pity of you. And now it has come to this." "S.E. had sunk into a chair, and now leaned upon her hand, and buried her face in her handkerchief. He had never caused her." Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.